Oh, I forgot about X. Oh well. Welcome back, guys, to your A-list lowdown coming at you Freedom Day, 4th of July, 2025, with Trump moves and homeless dress up, which feels like me most days.
I was thinking about welcome to working from home. So it's sort of funny because you're actually not homeless. You're always home, and it's like homeless dress up. That's funny. Dress like you're homeless at home. So
you called me homeless like an hour ago.
We should try to guess what we're talking about. So what, do you know what mine's about?
No, I do not know.
Okay. Trump moves would be about like some moves on the chessboard type thing or something, or.
Kinda. You could call it like that.
Or Trump moves, like makes moves, kind of. Trump makes moves.
No, it's kind of like how Trump has affected Canada already.
I was thinking, man, it's depressing sometimes going through all the content. And I went through this whole deconstruction of this article. Actually, I'd sent it to you on Instagram. And then I realized it's from May, so it wasn't super up to date. But I thought, I'm going to use your assistant to help me deconstruct it a little bit. And then I was just thinking, oh my God, there's all these people, like these mainstream establishments and these social media influencers that almost seem like they're paid by who knows who, just going off and, you know, all claiming to be about truth and all, but just going off with all these subjective things and these hit pieces. And then at the end, I'm like, I probably spent like 45 minutes trying to sort out this. And then I thought, you know, it's not even worth talking about on the show. But I do have a post from the guy who wrote it, just to read it to you.
Are we talking Canadian influencers?
Yeah, exactly. Like that addict guy, the ex addict guy, Guy Fuseli or whatever his name is. Like he's oh, yeah. Sure he gets paid for his propaganda.
He's a bit insufferable. Yeah,
and there's a few others that I've just come across now. Cole Bennett is the guy I was talking about. And it's just like, he's got a Substack and he's on Blue Sky. I tried to find some of his stuff on X, but it's not really there. But then I was thinking, if we could only just do could I find a bunch of positive stuff? Cause I don't want to always do negative stuff, but what kind of positive stuff it's really hard to pick positive stuff right now in Canada about Canadian stuff. There's not really a lot of positivity. I mean,
I'm sure you could find some, but nobody will watch.
You think, really? I don't know about that. I'm not sure about the whole, you know, everybody needs that negativity. I don't know. I feel like it's more engineered than.
I remember the very first original America site we tried to have the like good news daily on.
Yeah, yeah.
And no traction. Giving some death and destruction. Sad but true. Anyway,
yeah, we were going to do it. That was going to be part of the beginning of Grimerica, was going to be good news.
Yeah. And it's mostly, there's a lot of good news on the Grimerica show.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say the stampede has started here, I guess, in Alberta. The Calgary Stampede is on. Today's Friday, right? Yes. So today would be the opening day. I'd imagine the parade and all that jazz was this morning, and people will be partying for the next 10 days, tearing it up.
So is Carney going to be there in a cowboy hat and doing his little public dance?
You know, I probably would expect to see him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Carney and his wife decarbonizing the stampede or?
Decarnonizing.
Decarnonizing.
I don't know. He seems to be pulling a halt on a bunch of that stuff. I mean, I think we'll probably end up pulling out of that. It seems like we'll have to drop the industrial carbon tax now, too, because it looks like Europe is doing that. So, I mean, or we'll just be the only idiots in the world that even his EU buddies are like, this ain't working.
Really? Yeah. They're realizing it? That, hey, the West is collapsing because of them?
Yeah, it seems like it. Now, I've got a little thing we can read. Do I have it? Where'd it go? I don't have it.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't save that. I haven't been saving some of those.
Oh, wait, clips. Yeah, I do have it, I think.
Yeah, let's go over it right now then if you got it. Like the EU going back and forth about these carbon taxes and stuff. And
no, I don't have it.
I don't have it, okay.
But I did have it here. Let me see. Where is it? Because I had it highlighted and everything. got to be here somewhere.
So what was it about the EU carbon tax? I mean, I could probably find it real fast here on X.
It was about the EU dropping the industrial carbon tax. Yeah, correct.
So July 2nd, 2 days ago, the EU just admitted what many of us have been saying. Carbon taxes on exports hurt domestic industry and help foreign competitors. So now they're exempting industries like steel, cement. I'll just share it here. Steel, cement, and aluminum, and LNG from carbon taxes on export. Yet Mark Carney is doubling down, pushing for an industrial carbon tax in Canada that will slam our manufacturing and cost jobs. EU to exempt heavy industry from carbon tax on exports.
Which is the only one we had left, because we got rid of the consumer one and we were going to do the industrial one instead. But it seems like...
This is why you probably had it, because this is a great one here from Lynette Corbett. Mark Carney, Canada needs an industrial carbon tax to trade with the EU. The EU, we're scrapping the carbon tax for 90% of our industries. Carney is a clown. So are all of you who voted for him.
That's it. That's the one.
Liberals still pursuing industrial carbon taxes. First reading, EU exempting heavy industry from carbon taxes. Canada doubles down. So, all right.
Well, I got an interesting one for you. This A&W commercial. Have you seen this one?
I didn't. I purposely didn't watch it.
I'm going to play it here.
But hang on a sec. Okay. I'll comment after.
The interesting thing is that this is just a commercial that's playing in Canada, allegedly. I don't have cable, so I didn't see it myself, but I don't think they have A&W in India, do they? Maybe they do.
I don't know.
Aria has introduced the Sala Veggie Burger.
Ji?
Anji, Nana Pani aur Asli Veggie se bana Saledar Masedar. Ye nahi khaya, to kya khaya?
Yeah, that was it. So
that's the one. Do you think it's I mean, the comments don't say anything about it being not there. Let's see if there's A&W. Maybe it's from India, you think?
Well, isn't there some regulations that don't allow
A&W does not currently have any restaurants in India.
But isn't there some CRTC regulations about languages used in commercials for everybody?
It had to be English or Canadian, but...
Or Canadian or French.
There is Punjabi hockey now too, right?
Oh, so yeah, I mean, is it on a Punjabi channel?
You can accidentally go to the wrong feed during hockey season, I remember, and they got Punjabi announcers.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's okay, really. I mean... What do you, I don't know why that's a big deal then, really. I mean, there's enough of them here to create a whole industry of media, right?
Yeah, maybe.
We had teams, man. I was playing in the 90s and the early zeros against the whole teams, hockey teams of East Indians. I mean, they were like really good. Zero. What?
Do they speak English, though?
Yeah.
So they didn't need Indian.
They were fairly assimilated.
This is a clear slide towards not being Canada anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Because there should be tons of East Indians here. I'm not saying there should be, but there should be able to be tons of East Indians here and not have to change the language of the television.
Yeah. Right? Or maybe not make their own channel. Should they be allowed to make their own channel then?
I don't know. Is that what we want to get into here, where we got like all these different... You know, do we have just 8 national languages?
I'm sure there's a Mandarin, couple Mandarin channels too.
Yeah, I guess that's fine.
I don't know.
I mean, if it's like cable, you know, where it's like you could subscribe to whatever you want, or on Dish where you can pick these channels and stuff like that. But it shouldn't just be being broadcast, should it? By like our national. Do they still do that? I think they still do. Like, there's still some channels over the airwaves.
No, I don't think so.
I thought you could get one of those digital receiver things and pick up like 4 or 5 channels for free.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe it's fine. You know, I don't, I'm just playing it here. I'm not judging. It's it definitely didn't make me feel like great. I did my first reaction was like, oh, cool. This is great diversity. You know, maybe it would have been before in the Indian apocalypse or whatever's going on, whatever went on in the last few years, you know?
Yeah.
That made it weird. So speaking of the last few years, let's play this one from Mark.
Well, actually, hang on. Let's keep going on that vein too. So
this is that same vein. So
I got one to add to that you're not going to want to see at all.
New federal immigration numbers confirmed to CTV News show the surprising number of people entering Canada with prior criminal records. Canada approved more than 17,000 applications between 2014 and 2024, or about 70% of the requests that were made. Immigration Canada saying, quote, people with past convictions outside Canada must demonstrate they have been rehabilitated and do not pose a risk. Adding the policy has helped reunite families and allowed performers and athletes to enter Canada despite having criminal records.
No big deal. So, I mean, if it's just
17,000 of them, I mean, is this why there's crime? The crime is rampant right now and just escalating, like crime rings, like tow truck company, crime rings, drugs, organized gangs.
It's not a good look.
I mean, am I allowed to just go? You think, I mean, were we just allowed to go to other countries with a criminal record? Like, oh, I just got arrested for.
Well, I mean, I got buddies that can't come here, period, because they have a DUI. I mean, that seems to be real.
Remember how bad it was for the state? Yeah. Or if you had pot, like convicted with any kind of pot, you couldn't go down to the States.
I think that's still the case. I mean, they ask you if you've ever been charged, or they used to ask you if you ever had a drug charge. Maybe they don't anymore because they just know. I don't know. They did ask me that the last couple times. Anyway.
Okay, well, have you seen this video? I don't even want to play it. It's so gross, but I mean, and I cannot confirm that it's recently, but it looks like.
I've seen this video.
So there's a guy in a public pool just like washing his ass, literally like spraying, like splashing water on his ass, just washing it. Yeah. And in the public pool with the families around and the kids, I mean, it's pretty gross. So I don't know where that was from or anything like that, but I just thought I'd play it because it's been going around kind of funny.
It's hard to know what's real anymore.
Yeah. Well, that looked like a real clip. I mean,
that looked like a real clip for sure. It's definitely happened. It's just a matter of where or when.
Yeah.
I mean, I was looking at some stuff where they said there was an army ship or a Navy ship stopping them from getting to Antarctica, but I was suspect right away because they were all in like t-shirts and in a pretty small boat. And I'm like, you drove that boat all the way from Australia to Antarctica? I feel like that's a little ways. And, you can usually look in the comments and tell me this is from Perth or that, you know, this got posted. Someone has done the sleuthing for you. So obviously heard about this. We had some bomb threats going on in Canada that I don't know if they're giving much details out on yet, but this is a new one.
Zooming following bomb threats affecting facilities at multiple airports. Let's turn to Mark Harkasol for the latest now. So, Mark, what more can you tell us?
Juanita, yeah, we've heard from individual airports as well in the CBC newsroom here that things are ramping back up to speed, if they were ever off speed at all. We received reports, for instance, from an official at Trudeau Airport earlier today who said that this situation really didn't affect their airport operations. They didn't have a ton of delays. And if you look at the boards at the various airports affected across Canada this morning, there's not a ton of delays or cancellations to talk about, whether that's departures or arrivals. The scene you are looking at right now, though, is from Ottawa International Airport a little earlier this morning. This video sent back to us by a CBC News colleague who was waiting to catch a flight when the situation first unfolded. There were significant delays at many airports. Some people had their flights delayed by up to an hour in some cases. The situation here is that there were bomb threats called in at these airports. We first got word of it from the Federal Aviation Authority in the United States, who listed ground stops at the airports in Montreal and Ottawa on their website. Those were shortly taken off, though, but we made some calls. It turns out that, Juanita, you mentioned NAV Canada, the air traffic control authority in the country. The threats were made specifically to their towers at these various airports, and we have a statement from them. They wrote to us saying, quote, "Early this morning, NAV Canada was made aware of bomb threats affecting facilities in Ottawa, Montreal, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Calgary, and Vancouver. Employees at impacted locations are safe, and a temporary ground stop has been implemented at the affected airports. We are collaborating with authorities to address the situation and ensure the safety of all personnel and passengers. Travelers are advised to check directly with their airline for the latest updates, as delays may occur." So that is the advice right now, is to check with your airline, check with the airport ahead of time. It sounds like any delays that did exist are rapidly dissolving, but you should still check ahead anyway. Important to note, while police in these various jurisdictions are still investigating, at this point, as far as we know, there have been no explosives discovered, anything like that. This appears to be just a threat. Police forces that we talk to around Canada in these various cities are calling this simply a security issue at this point. They are all still investigating. We have not heard about any claims of responsibility, any arrests or anything like that at this point. But the good news is that it seems as though there's the all clear at these navigational towers, these air traffic control towers at all of these airports. And things seem to be ramping back up to speed, if not there already.
All right.
What do you think?
I don't know. It's it seems coordinated. I mean, but you could probably coordinate something, even a prank like that, pretty easily with AI and stuff like that nowadays. Can't you easily get like fake numbers and stuff too, like burner numbers just through websites?
Yeah, probably. So there's no like they didn't say who did it. Or just, what's the point? Usually with a bomb threat, there's a point. It's like an activist.
Or they're covering it up. Or they found a folk, you know, or they're just like, you know, they quashed something, or they thought something got through, or they're, you know, this is like a slip up and they just don't want us to know
what the actual reason was.
Well, yeah, because it's going to be a brown person, you know, I mean, I hate to say that, but if someone's putting bombs at airports, there's a 90% chance with all the new Canadians we've let in and not vetted over the last 3 years. And then we're pissing off Palestine and Israel somehow, and, you know, and India, and, you know, it's just a mess. We've managed to piss off all the people we let into the country. You know, there's like a significant portion of them that don't like us. So we'll see what
happens. They also come with their own players
come here to start a new life and all that jazz. But
some of them seem to come with their own wars too already, right? Like the Eritrea stuff that was happening in Calgary, and they're like
the most protested guy at the G7 wasn't even Trump. It was Modi.
Oh, yeah.
The Khalistanis were riled right up.
Yeah.
So, you know, what are they? Are they just fine? India says they're terrorists. We say
they're fine here. They're fine here. They can walk around with their swords and everything and weapons.
Because the cartels don't tend to bomb airports, you know?
That's why I was asking us. It seems odd. Something's not.
But terrorists do. So, I mean, we could have pissed off Iran. So we probably got Iran pissed at us and Israel and Palestine. I mean, I don't know. The Palestinians isn't even just the Palestinians. It's like all the Muslims are freaking out to a certain extent.
And what's the CTV talking openly about that? Like their article about the 17,000 criminals Aladdin. Like why are they all of a sudden now talking like that?
That is also odd. Yeah, I would agree. That is
normally they wouldn't really publish like, well, who knows? I'm just speculating, but you know what I mean? They seem to cover up a lot of federal crimes and corruption things and stuff. So why would they even mention it?
Well, there seems to be a weird switch, pivot on some of that stuff. Not all of it. I mean, here's another one for you. I'm sure you've seen this one going around, but I'll play it here just for posterity stake. We've kind of talked
annual about, report.
We've talked about some of this stuff on the show before, but this is just another one that's slipping into the mainstream, right? Even this was the kind of stuff that was only on our show even like 4 months ago.
So this is the one around cocaine.
At first glance, they read more like instructions than warnings.
A typical snorted dose is between 30 milligrams and 70 milligrams. So these are for adults who are actively choosing to use drugs, like at a rave. This is not for kids.
Ruth Taylor collected these cards on Tuesday while attending a school-sanctioned grade 5 to 12 youth pride parade and festival with her child.
And it was so fun, and the kids were having a great time.
But after seeing the materials on display at the AIDS Vancouver Island booth, things shifted from celebration to concern.
I told them that I thought it was inappropriate. It looked like marketing for drug use.
Following the event, Taylor
noted, oh my God, I mean, it does look like
the district's real administration.
Isn't it crazy?
Marketing. I mean, look at that. Cocaine.
That's date rape drug.
Oh my God.
Notified the school's principal, who quickly raised the issue with the district's administration. This letter of apology was sent out, owning the mishap.
We're taking responsibility for the lack of oversight and taking steps to help make sure that going forward, all resources that are handed down by external organizations at our events are school age appropriate.
Look at the ketamine one. I mean, doesn't that just make you want to do ketamine?
Who's organizing this? I missed at the beginning when they said who was organizing.
AIDS. AIDS. Look them up. See if you can find out anything about them. They're from BC.
Okay.
AIDS Vancouver Island was not available for comment.
AIDS Vancouver Island.
But in a statement said they had been told it was an event for older youth, going on to say, we do stand by the fundamental importance of youth receiving honest, factual, and appropriate substance use and sexual health materials so they can make informed decisions about their safety and well-being.
Well, so do I. I think education is key, but if you're going to be addressing the risks of drug addiction and overdose, then this is not the way to do it.
According to ABI's latest annual report, its $13 million in revenue is largely funded by taxpayers. Safety advocates say the incident brings everything into question.
What we're trying to do is to ensure that how these dollars are spent is actually helping to ease the crisis that we find ourselves in.
So far this year, Mid-Vancouver Island has seen 29 toxic drug deaths, and with no mention of fentanyl on any one of these cards, Taylor fears instead of harm reduction, they're only risking more of it.
This is not bright and colorful. It will ruin your life.
Patty Stanton, Global News.
Wow, holy dude. I mean, it reminds me of the guy Fisella we were talking about, where he was talking about he's meeting some people down in the States, and he's like, he's going to bring this safe injection site sort of model to America. Like, it's going to save a bunch of lives. And I'm like, well, aren't you guys having sort of an OD problem in BC right now? And I mean, I don't want to just blame safe injection, because I think that maybe there's some of that that's okay, but let's go through a little bit of this is that AIDS Vancouver. So AIDS Vancouver Island, AVI, is the real acronym. Health and Community Services is a nonprofit organization based in BC, multiple locations along the island. They promote health, dignity, and well-being for people affected by HIV, hepatitis C, and substance use through harm reduction, education, and support services. So they do harm reduction, community-based programs, Safer North Island Initiative. It's all this stuff. Just, oh man, I don't think I ever would have got clean and sober if I had all this stuff dragging me down. Controversy regarding drug education material. So in June 2025, they faced criticism. So this is, at a school-sanctioned pride event in Ladysmith, Nanaimo Ladysmith School.
That's this one, yeah. For kids under 12.
Oh my God, from 5 to 12. Oh, grades 5 to 12. The materials reportedly sourced from Dance Safe included cards. Yeah, okay, so we're going through all that. It's grounded in a harm reduction philosophy which focuses on minimizing the negative impacts of substance use rather than promoting abstinence. See, that's what I'm talking about. there needs to be an abstinence goal, right? Like, as if you go past that line of addiction and you can't get back, like, if you keep using, you're just going to die eventually, young.
And it's kids. I mean, it should just be abstinence, period.
Yes, yes. They collaborate with community organizations, indigenous groups, and people with lived experience to develop culturally relevant and evidence-based programs. Their efforts are part of a broader initiative to address the opioid and toxic drug crisis in BC, supported by funding from programs like Health Canada's Substance Use and Addictions Program. So you can go to their website for more. And I said who funds them. So it's at Vancouver Island Health Authority, Health Canada's Substance Use and Addictions Program, provincial government.
All taxpayers.
Yeah. Public Health Agency of Canada, BC Gaming Commission, charitable donations and benefits, and other grants they've got. They said recent posts on X have referenced AVI receiving $11 million in government funding, though this figure is unverified. It may reflect cumulative or multi-year funding across their programs. Yeah, I mean, $11 million is not really much to go very far with all this work that they're doing. But so then that kind of leads me to my my topic, which is this cab driver here.
White guy.
No.
Oh.
He says, cabbie telling me how last Wednesday of the month, right, every month in Vancouver is the busiest day because many are faking fentanyl addiction. They dress up as homeless to qualify for the $1,700 welfare check, then sell their free fentanyl supply on the street. Average $6,000 per month. After 18 years, he's moving to Sask. Welcome to Sask, cab driver. There's a little town here that doesn't have any transportation. Maybe you can just settle into our little town and drive for people.
The money won't be as good.
When I worked at the bar in Vancouver Island, we called out Welfare Wednesday. Welfare checks came out on the last Wednesday of the month to allow for paying rent. Many were rich for a day. Yeah, that's of course. So April's Welfare Wednesday, single worst day for recorded overdose calls in BC history. There's no $1,700 welfare check in BC. Stop spreading bullshit. Just reporting what he told me, bud. Maybe it was a mistaken, but yeah, I mean, Grok, is that true about $1,700 welfare truck? So the persons with disabilities provides about $1,484 per month for singles, closer to $1,948 for couples. $1,700 may be an approximation, but that's getting pretty close. Addiction can qualify if severe. Safer supply programs offer prescribed opioids with evidence of some diversion selling occurring, though not widespread per RCMP. The cabbie's anecdote aligns with reported issues in Vancouver. Interesting.
Do another one.
Okay. Well, and this is where, so after all that, right? This is coming to Canada.
I would disagree with you, okay? That is why.
So anyone cycling no-handed in rush hour in City London is going to get ticketed?
If I see them.
They are. And you think that is a valuable use of City of London police time?
So it's hard to catch. These guys are talking fast with the English accent. He's talking about them using their time to give this guy a ticket for cycling through the City of London. And try to guess what rule he's breaking after I play a little bit more.
And bike theft is endemic. You don't even investigate most bike thefts. Let me finish. And where there's phone snatching going on, you could be getting robbers and you're letting phone snatchers and bike thieves go to ticket law-abiding citizens cycling no-handed. Do you think that's an honestly good use of City London Police time?
So, cycling with no hands on the handlebars.
Yeah.
Okay. Places other road users at risk. Contravenes.
No, it doesn't. How does it? How does it? This is amazing. So cycling no-handed violates Article 2 of the Human Rights Act. Right to life.
No, I said it endangers people.
You said it
on the road.
You just said it. Okay. Me cycling no-handed violates Article 2 of the Human Rights Act. I think we're done with that. It's rather silly, isn't it?
So. It's pretty funny because he just gets really, really funny, but it's cycling no-handed. So if you cycle no hands, it really feels like it's a problem. We've launched our summer campaign, Safer City Streets. I mean, doesn't that sound like Safer Drug Supply right there? Like, so there, you know, you hear about these phone snatches all the time and the bike thefts. I mean, I went through the bike theft in Calgary where they just don't give a shit. The cops just don't, because I played hockey with one of the cops. He's like, they just let him right back out. They catch these thieves. They let him right back out. They go to another neighborhood and steal more bikes and cars. And then they're ticketing people that ride with no hands because it's a risk to the safety. To the public safety. Is it fake? I mean, is it real? Do you think?
I think it's real. Yeah.
Did she say the Article 2
thing? City of London Police.
What?
It's the City of London Police underneath it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's City of London. No, yeah, City of London. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Faces other road users at risk. Contravenes.
No, it doesn't. How does it? How does it?
Oh, she does say it contravenes Article 2 of the Human Rights Act. Because you can...
Mandatory jabs are fine, though.
Right? I mean, you can't trust people to ride with no hands. I mean, if you crash and hurt somebody, then yeah, that's a problem, right? Just like if you crash with one hand or two hands and you're not paying attention.
Just like if you crash your car.
So, Revan there, he says, I'm not on disability and refuse when I have all right, because I know people are abusing our disability program. Yeah, totally.
Well, here's the Trump moves. Trump moves, which is actually Trump's moves. How Trump's moves have reshaped Canada's path. This is an article from Epoch Times. I figure we could go through quickly here. The ways in which Trump has influenced Canada even before beginning his second term. Have been multifaceted, in many cases a Liberal government at odds ideologically with Republicans in general, and Trump in particular has presented the resulting changes as necessary for Canada to grow economically or assert its sovereignty. Dropping the DST in other cases, Ottawa has essentially been compelled into overturning policies it was defending only a short while ago. The latest example is decision to abolish the digital service tax on June 29th, 2 days after Trump said he was canceling all trade talks in Canada. With Canada. The DST, which applies to foreign and domestic businesses earning online revenues for services offered to Canadians like marketplaces and social media, came into force last year and applied retroactively to 2022. The payment deadline was June 30th of this year. 3 days after the meeting with Trump, Finance Minister François-Philippe Champagne said the DST was being broached as part of broader discussions on trade, while adding the DST is enforced and going to be applied. On June 29th, Champagne announced the DST would be rescinded by way of legislation. On June 30th, Carney said the pullback was expected as the two parties work on a final trade deal. Then we have this other one, border protection and drug enforcement. Tariffs were imposed after Trump acceded to the White House, leading to Ottawa taking more steps to placate the president in February, including the appointment of a fentanyl czar. Have we ever heard anything from him?
Not since the very beginning.
To coordinate the fight against the deadly synthetic opioid as requested by Washington, Canadian officials also started using the terms illegal migration when attempting to show Trump that Canada was taking action on the issue, whereas before, Ottawa's de facto official terminology appeared to be irregular migration. It's unlikely that Ottawa would have gone ahead with such moves had a Democrat been in the White House. The Biden administration did not prioritize border enforcement, nor did it widely use tariffs as a tool of foreign policy and upping defense. One area where Ottawa was pressured before Trump's second term is defense spending. Former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau arrived at the NATO summit in Washington last year with no stated plan for reaching the military alliance's defense spending guideline of 2% of GDP. On June 9th, Carney committed to meeting the 2% benchmark by the end of March 2026. The announcement came days before Canada hosted world leaders in Alberta for the G7 summit and before the NATO summit in The Hague in late June. There, Canada and its allies agreed to increase defense spending to 5% of GDP by 2035. We're focused on the outcome, the result, protecting Canadians. We're driven by that, not by, with all due respect, sitting in the NATO building by NATO accountants. The increased spending makes defense one of the largest items in the federal budget. The parliamentary budget officer estimates defense spending will exceed $62 billion in 2025-2026. Health transfers to the provinces are projected at $54.7 billion in the same period. So now the military and the debt payments are higher than the, and the interest on the debt is higher than the healthcare transfers. Internal trade barriers, economy, and election. Before the House of Commons went on summer break, the Liberal government managed to pass promised tax cuts along with Bill C-5, removing federal barriers to interprovincial trade. The legislation also speeds up development of major projects deemed to be in the national interest. While these have not yet been chosen, some of the propositions on the table could have major economic impact for Canada. It remains to be seen whether they will include new pipelines. But had Trump not been there, the urgency to reduce Canada's dependency on the United States for its oil trade would not likely have become an issue for national debate. Nor would celebrating Canada's national identity have likely returned to the forefront after years of government-promoted messaging that criticized Canada's past. Trudeau started his mandate in 2015 by declaring that Canada was a post-national state with no core identity. Trudeau later said in 2019 that Canada's historic actions around the treatment of Indigenous women and girls amounted to genocide. So,
yeah, that's interesting. Do you have anything more on that, or
that's all I got?
Because that's the thing he didn't help change in Canada was the EV stuff, right? I mean, for all our American listeners too, like it's hard for them to. It must be hard for them to imagine that we're putting in all these EV mandates in the.
Biden had one for a little while there, but Trump rescinded it.
Right. I don't think
this one's gonna happen either.
But they're just moving forward on this, right? Did you hear this thing about the ferries, right? Canada wants to mandate electric vehicles by 2035, but Transport Canada, so that's only like 10 years away, but Transport Canada changes won't allow charging at BC ferries properties and vessels and won't allow EVs on tow trucks or with damage on vessels because they are so risky. So if you buy an EV and live off the mainland, you essentially overpaid for a brick. I know two guys personally that have Teslas that have to take the ferries. Well, they don't have to. I mean, you know, but they would be stuck wherever they are. But yeah, it's interesting, eh? The new BC ferries policies, like, is it really that dangerous that we're not even going to address the danger, but we're going to mandate these things? It's we're just living in a clown show. It's unbelievable. Electric, hybrid, and
take all of them.
What's that?
They're so heavy. I wonder how many the ferry can take.
Oh yeah, they got huge trucks and stuff in there too that are like full. I mean, I'm sure they do weight calculations, not only length. So yeah, they're saying that they're prohibited from charging at ferries properties and on vessels. So, and then they have with minor or cosmetic damage that clearly doesn't affect the battery are allowed at the discretion of the vessel master, provided they are being driven under their own power. Vehicles with major damage, including exposed batteries, fluid leaks, or wiring issues, are not able to be transported. Electric vehicles that aren't being driven, like those on tow trucks, aren't allowed on board. So, I mean, I guess I don't know how you get these things fixed. But just to prove that these are real issues, let's go to a quick. This is interesting to see Aaron Gunn, who was doing documentaries on homeless and drug addiction in Vancouver, get a seat in the parliament. So here's what he's got to say.
I don't think you're sharing the tab.
I'm not sharing the tab. Thank you for that. Are you ready?
Mr. Speaker, after 10 years of Liberal government, Canadians are facing a cost of living crisis. And now Liberals are proposing to ban all gas-powered vehicles, including pickup trucks and SUVs, in just 10 years, a policy that will cost 38,000 Canadian jobs and drive up the price of new vehicles by $20,000 each. Conservatives believe that Canadians who drive their kids to school or to sports or themselves to work should have the freedom to choose the vehicle that's right for them and their families at a price that they can afford. Why does this Liberal government apparently disagree? Oh, great question.
The Honourable Minister of the Environment and Climate Change.
Mr. Speaker, once again, it is so shocking in a moment when our auto industry is under fire from the unjustified tariffs from the United States, that we have the conservatives talking down a growing industry right in our country. We are going to stand up for our auto workers. We're going to support our auto workers. And we're going to make sure that Canadians have access to a growing area for vehicles. It's actually growing globally. We're going to make sure that Canadians have access to zero emission vehicles.
Oh, make sure they have access to that, eh? I mean, can you imagine that? You're not making sure they have access. I don't want you to make sure we have access to anything. I want you just to get
out of the way. Sure we have access to it. Just don't force us to access it.
Like, that's just not, I mean, that's the lamest answer ever. So here's a good one from Melissa Lansman, too. I think she might be new. I'm not too sure, but she's another conservative politician. But here's the liberal plan. What?
Not new.
Not new?
I think she's from Lethbridge.
Well, not.
Oh, is she? Okay. Let's see what she has to say here. It's kind of good.
The government wants to make these illegal. Well, not these, but they want to ban gas powered cars. Not in 100 years, not someday, but in 2035, 10 years from now. This is a crazy proposal, but let's indulge for just one moment. What do we need to get this over the finish line? We need 700,000 new charging stations across.
So this is like, wow, somebody's addressing the infrastructure logistical problems.
Across the country, we've only built 60,000. And in 2024, we actually built fewer than the year before that. The electrical infrastructure to power all of these cars, to say that we're even close would be a joke. This would also be a massive increase to the total electricity consumed in this country. This is fantasy land. The rebate program, it ran out of money 2 months early, but the mandates, they're staying. It's like telling Canadians they have to eat steak every night and then cutting their grocery budget and calling it a climate plan. It's insane. Auto CEOs are sounding the alarm. Canadian economists say that you could lose 38,000 jobs in this sector. This isn't innovation. It's economic sabotage. And it's happening right here in this country.
Absolutely. And I don't personally own a vehicle. I've never owned one, but my service vehicle as minister is 100% electric vehicle. So I totally understand what some of the challenges are. I'm living it.
In places outside of downtown ridings of the environment minister and her trusty sidekick, the heritage minister, it's not just inconvenient, it's impossible. There's no chargers for hundreds of kilometers, minus 40 weather, long haul drives just to get groceries. But Ottawa thinks they know better than you. Not everyone wants a Tesla. Electric vehicles might be a smart choice for some, but they shouldn't be forced on everyone because this isn't policy. It's some crazy ideology.
Should I keep going or do you want to stop?
You might as well finish it off.
There's another minute. It's a good rant. I mean, it's good to have sort of there.
Canadians can't afford groceries or housing, and let alone a brand new Tesla with no rebate and nowhere to charge it. We know that these guys backtrack when things get unpopular. Remember how the carbon tax was going to save the world? Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to predict the future. Just like the carbon tax that made gas and groceries and everything you buy more expensive, they'll reverse themselves on this one too. But they will wait until the dealerships are out of business and the plants are shut down and make the change and convince you that it was a good idea that they couldn't communicate and it was your fault. Don't let them. Stop this before it hurts more Canadians. Conservatives will stand up for workers, for consumers, for common sense, and not for this mandate. Yes to freedom of choice with a real plan that actually works for Canadians before they trounce the auto sector.
Well, one sector they're not going to trounce is the dairy sector.
Well, you never know. That might, I mean, I heard predictions that might come up too. The government is simply abiding by the Paris Accord that both the LPC and the CPC refused to remove us from. While Pierre was opposition of finance in 2020, not only did not oppose the doubling Canadian taxpayers' financial commitment, the only CP, I'm not going to read this whole thing, he stated that it was not even on the table. So, yeah, I don't want to read that whole
thing. Well, I gave the Alberta Prosperity Project all of my stances, and I said, you better think about all that before you call me back, and they haven't called me back, so. It's probably the anti-vaccine one that got him off the most. And anti-vaccine, and anti-lots of stuff.
Yeah. What did, so you actually physically talked to them or like?
She said to text her back in the message. So I text her.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I mean, they might show back yet. They might just be behind, but.
Yeah.
Let's see how this goes along with your rumors. Ottawa removes all federal exceptions in Canada Trade Pact for smoother interprovincial trade. Let's go down near the bottom of this one. This is, they were talking about the legislation, One Canadian Economy Act, formerly known as Bill C-5, the legislation designed to eliminate federal obstacles to internal trade and labor mobility, received almost unanimous approval from MPs on June 20th, shortly before, because that was the Conservatives and the Liberals. Shortly before the House adjourned for its summer break, it was approved by the Senate on June 26th and received royal assent that same day. I mean, can you imagine how efficient these guys are? I can't even believe it. Became law. All provincial and territorial governments have pledged to conduct a review of their own respective exceptions under the CFTA, and several provinces have also taken steps to dismantle certain internal trade barriers between them. Ontario, for instance, signed a memorandum of understanding with Manitoba in May, and also has previously signed internal trade agreements in place with both Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. The Internal Trade Committee, consisting of Freeland, along with either the premier or responsible minister from each of the 13 provinces and territories, is scheduled to meet on July 8th. The government said the meeting is expected to outline the progress made by each jurisdiction in eliminating its specific exceptions under the trade agreement. What do you think some of those exceptions could be?
I don't know.
Some federal barriers remain in place despite the push for free trade across Canada and despite Ottawa doing away with 53 exceptions. Oh. The supply management framework for dairy, eggs, and poultry products in Canada, which determines provincial production quotas, will continue after legislation put forward by the Bloc Québécois received royal assent in June. The legislation, called an Act to Amend the Department of Foreign Affairs Trade and Development Act, is a bid to preserve Canada's supply management system during future trade negotiations with the United States, but it also keeps in place rules that differ from province to province. Supply management in Canada operates on a national scale, but is implemented at the provincial level. Each province's marketing board manages its share of the national quota for dairy, poultry, and eggs and allocates it to individual farmers. The system means small-scale farmers working to develop niche markets and focus on direct sales to local customers cannot enter or expand milk, poultry, or egg production due to minimum quota regulations or low quota exemption thresholds in their province. The National Farmers Union says, citing this as a domestic challenge posed by the system. Although the One Canada Economy Act doesn't deal with supply management concerns, it does address reputational issues that the Canadian industry is slow-moving and gets mired in red tape, a recent report from Deloitte Canada said. That said, it could be years before Ottawa's step to knock down interprovincial trade barriers and build out national infrastructure pay dividends, the report noted. It takes time to reorient supply chains and manufacturing industries in some provinces will still take a hit during the adjustment. Adopting the One Canada Economy framework is not a magic wand that changes the landscape, said Don Desjardins, chief economist at Deloitte Canada, but it is building more resilience in the economy and more room for growth.
So is One Economy Canada supposed to be the breaking down the interprovincial trade barriers then? That's the Liberal solution to this problem?
Yes.
And what are some of those barriers? Like, can you give me some examples of those barriers? Like, I don't really understand what, I know it's a pain moving from province to province, but is it some of those things like regulations that are different from each province, like for medical or?
I'd imagine it's
insurance, that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah, I'd imagine it's a nightmare. The insurance ain't going to change, I don't think. But, I think that will make it easier for people to move around, mainly so that they can all move here, probably.
Yeah.
We need all the tradesmen out here now.
So do you think it's a good, from what you've read about it, do you think it's a good idea?
No, I don't think it's a good idea. No, I don't think, some of it's good, but there's a bunch of crazy shit in there that they can just, you know, do whatever they want and just bypass laws and decide which laws apply. Not good. Not good. Here, let's jump into this one. I'm going to do this one quick. I got two more left. This and one more. Cochrane, Ontario declares food insecurity emergency after food bank sees historic number of clients. The food bank has seen 106% increase in client usage since 2022. I think it's a big city, right? It's not. In the small town of Cochrane, Ontario, upwards of 100 new people a month are using the community's food bank. The Cochrane Food Bank says over the last 3 years, data shows its usage rates have increased by 106%, highlighting a growing food insecurity crisis. It seems more like a money insecurity crisis. There's plenty of food around if you can buy it. We're at a historic all-time high for our usage here in Cochrane. Perlow says unemployment, rising costs for food and housing, and increased homelessness are contributing to more food insecurity in Cochrane and across northeastern Ontario. She said they serve just under 4,000 people in the community of 5,500 in 2024, a number she calls scary and insane. Last year's total was a 25% increase from the year before when they served 3,100 people.
That's massive increase.
That's crazy. While more individuals and outhouse people are coming through the doors, there can only be so many homeless people in a town of 5,000. You know what I mean? This year, they've already helped 419 households as of May, so we're definitely going to break that number this year. I don't want to break those records of people needing the usage. It's heartbreaking to see we have such an increase in usage in our small community. That's about the same size of town I grew up in. So it's concerning when you look at a quarter of the families in your community that are using the food bank. That should be concerning for everybody. Yeah, I guess, right? 400 households, so a town of 5,000, there's probably only, 2,000 houses.
Yeah.
So this is just saying that the municipality's commitment to addressing these issues, and it's just trying to say that they're going to work with us with any initiatives. She has also sent a copy of the letter to Feed Ontario, which will use the data to advocate for more provincial recognition of the problem and financial resources for Cochrane and other municipalities feeling the pressure of food insecurity. I mean, it's worth mentioning that we just sent another $4.6 billion to Zelensky. Right?
That's a lot. That's 4,600 millions.
Yeah. So, you want me to just finish up?
Sure.
You wanted some good news? Here's some good news, at least if you're in Alberta, I would say. Somewhat good news. This is a long clip, so I'll stop it whenever you like.
Okay.
The Alberta Next panel is touring Alberta to hear from Albertans on how our province can better protect ourselves from Ottawa's economic attacks while building a more prosperous, strong, and sovereign Alberta within Canada. A provincial referendum on some of these ideas is coming in 2026. But what's on that referendum ballot and what happens next for Alberta is up to you. One idea being discussed by the panel is reforming federal equalization and transfers. Since 2005, Alberta taxpayers have contributed, on average, $23 billion more per year to the federal government in federal taxes than they received back in projects, benefits, and other spending from Ottawa. That's a net loss to Albertans of nearly $500 billion in just 20 years. Most of those redistributed Alberta tax dollars are spent by Ottawa and Quebec and other liberal-leaning provinces across the country. And part of that massive fiscal transfer out of Alberta comes through the Federal Equalization Program, which has seen Alberta pay over $67 billion into the program since 1957, while receiving back not a single penny since 1965. In 2021, Albertans voted in a referendum to remove equalization from the Constitution, but Ottawa completely ignored us. So what next? Alberta can't stop these federal transfers on its own. The Alberta government doesn't write a check to Ottawa each year, and we can't ask Albertans to stop paying their federal taxes. The fact is, fixing this problem will require political support from other provinces. One option that would be appealing to most other provinces is to have the provinces collect a larger share of overall taxes. This is how it could work. Currently, Ottawa collects over 60% of all the federal and provincial taxes that Canadians pay. The Ottawa bureaucracy takes its portion, with the remainder inefficiently and unequally distributed to the provinces. The dollars we do get back have a lot of strings attached, forcing us to run our provincial programs and build infrastructure the way Ottawa wants us to. No provinces want that, especially the big ones like Quebec, Ontario, BC, and Alberta. What if we cut out the middleman and instead had provincial governments that are responsible for delivering health, education, and social services, collect around 60% of all taxes, with Ottawa receiving the rest? Ottawa, in turn, would be able to end most transfer programs to the provinces, along with all the strings, bureaucracy, and waste attached to them. Quebec has already proposed having the federal government let provinces keep GST revenue generated in their provinces in return for ending the federal health transfer. Seems like a great idea. Why not apply that same logic to all federal transfers? Less money collected and wasted in Ottawa. Less federal transfers with only a modest amount of equalization for the smallest provinces and territories that actually need it. And more funds for provincial health, education, and other programs without strings attached by Ottawa's politicians and bureaucrats. That seems like something most provinces could rally behind. So what say you, Alberta? Should Alberta take a lead role in working with the other provinces to reform federal transfers and equalization by having the provinces collect a larger share of overall taxes, with Ottawa collecting less? And are there any other strategies Alberta should be looking at to alleviate the massive federal fiscal drain to Alberta?
Went by quicker than I thought it would.
Yeah, me too, yeah. Well, that's good. So let me read to you what some people think of your separation initiative, okay? Let me see how accurate you think this is, okay? Let's be clear about Alberta separatists. This was never about pipelines or prosperity. It's not about getting resources to market. It's about pushing an extreme ideological agenda that most Albertans and most Canadians reject. It's about book bans. It's about banning abortion, banning gay marriage, and fueling racism. They won't say that part out loud, so they hide behind the economy. But once you look at who's driving this movement, the truth becomes obvious. It's not about independence. It's about control. What do you think?
Well, I'm sure there's some racists mixed up in there. I mean, they could probably find a few if they wanted to really look. They could probably find a few all those things. But there's also, you know, it's mostly not.
Not this kind of racism at all? Societal death spiral from Clyde Do Something. We've heard a lot about systemic racism. The answer to perceived systemic racism is not more systemic racism. And the response to this crap shouldn't be more racism. The buck stops with you. Enough tit for tat. So here's any race except Caucasian for kids CBC. Have you seen this?
Is that like to apply for a job or something?
Yeah. Hello. If you're here to find instructions regarding a self-tape audition submission for the male kids CBC host, so it's a kids host, you're in the right place. Below, you will find a PDF with the audition material and all of the instructions. Please only submit if you match the following criteria. Male, between the ages of 23 and 35 years, any race except Caucasian.
So could it be that they just need a brown for the role, specific role?
I don't know. I mean sometimes you need a host for a program. So
sometimes you need a not white guy.
You do not exclude Caucasian children when the laws of this land embrace all children of all racism and all backgrounds. It has always been that way. Shameful and repulsive. This is reverse racism.
It's, you know. It's weird. I mean, it gets extra greasy because it's a Canadian government outlet.
What we have, exactly.
They can hire whoever they want.
Well, that's what's crazy. So what we have is systemic racism against Canadians of European heritage under the false assumption this is fighting against colonialism/imperialism. This, in fact, divides people, communities in Canada and focuses on division instead of genuine progressive policies, dialogue for all communities in Canada. Works for the corrupt establishment, but not for the public Canadians.
Yeah, well, the problem is that most of the public Canadians are retarded.
Sorry. Male between 23 and 35, any race except white. So it's for the role of love interest for the white female character then?
Ah, interracial. Bada bing. Hey, you got anything else?
Nothing I can't save till next week.
All right, let's get out of here, I guess, before we're starting to get ourselves closer and closer to getting in trouble. We got the stream shut down last week for showing a pellet gun. I didn't know you couldn't do that, but we got a community violations thing on the contact at the cabin page because someone had a beer in their head on TikTok. I guess you can't do that.
You can't have what? A beer in your hand?
In your hand, yeah.
On TikTok?
On TikTok.
Wow.
We actually also got another TikTok strike for this channel for, I think it was COVID stuff. We did something about mRNA. They didn't seem to like that. So
on this channel?
On the A-list, yeah, the A-list TikTok, which is where we're most popular, strangely, even though I don't go there at all. We seem to be big on TikTok. So.
I mean, we should have been saying Dr. Uggs in this episode instead of D-R-U-G-S as a full word, but...
I ain't doing that. I ain't gonna ever just start talking like a retard, even if it means that we don't get a bunch of subscribers. I know.
But I mean, honestly, but we're still doing it. I mean, I passed on some vaccine stuff, Canadian.
Stuff we don't do here. I mean, that's just, you know... We've buried that hatchet, but I'm not going to start just, you know, making new speak words up.
Yeah,
play those games, even if it means we can't go viral and we can't, you know, make it. We'll keep trying. You know, we're at episode 50. I would say if we don't have 100 supporters by the time we get to 100, it's going to be hard to keep going. So a-list.ca if people want to support us, or they can just like, share, subscribe, share all this stuff around YouTube. We're shadow banned as shit. So, you know, if you share it, maybe that'll get out there. Commenting seems to help. Liking, subscribing. You can sign up for a membership on YouTube. You can go to a-list.ca and sign up over there. You can donate over there. We can get this in podcast form over there. If you don't like watching in the video form, even though it is kind of a video show, but you can get it in podcast form. If that's what you want to do, you can also check out contact@thecabin.com for trips and events. Primerica.ca for other podcasts, over 700 episodes over there. Primericaoutlaw.ca for another podcast where we do talk about vaccines and stuff all the time and all the other stuff we're not supposed to. Adultbrain.ca for all sorts of audiobooks and ebooks and everything else you need. That's a publishing company. And can't get Grand America CBD if you're in Canada, but you can get tallow at BigSkyTallow.ca. And I think that's it, right? I don't think the shrooms link is working anymore, so I'm not going to keep saying it.
Okay.
We never got any money, so and we definitely sold some shrooms. We did not sell anything. Some people might have heard some stuff from us and did that. So, yeah, we hope you like the show. Tell your friends about the show. We love you. Thanks for listening and have a good weekend.
Who's going to kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun, But your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrities most told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north. Oh, true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, your sacred cow.